It really doesn't mean a whole lot, but it sure meant a lot to them back then when it was written. And we're going to talk about why that is. Every book in the Bible is important. Every book in the Bible is essential. There are none of the 66 that could have been left out that wouldn't have broken up the chain of information God wanted us to have. And there are no others that need to be added to fill in any gaps anywhere. Sometimes folks talk about the Apocrypha and adding those 11 books that are in the Douay-Rheims Bible. The Roman Catholic version has 77 books in its Bible, not 66. There's 1st and 2nd Maccabees, there's Tobit, there's Bel and the Dragon, there's all kinds. We don't have those in ours. We've got the 66 that we need in our canon of Scripture that covers everything we need to have. Tonight we get to 1 Chronicles as we look at our notes tonight. The first book of the Chronicles is a, here's our key word, and I want you to get it. Brother Bill, it's a little bit loud coming back at me here. The book of 1 Chronicles is a retelling of the history, which is recorded in 2 Samuel. All right? What we're going to read about in Chronicles, the death of Saul, the reign of David, was all covered in 2 Samuel. So this is not new material. Remember, all the way through, from Genesis to Exodus, to every book that we followed has been a continuation of the story, except for the book of Ruth. You remember, the book of Ruth could have been taken out, and we could have gone straight from Judges to 1 Samuel, but Ruth was put there to give us some information about the times of the Judges. But all these other first 17 books of the Bible are a continuation. But when we get to 1st and 2nd Chronicles, we're seeing a retelling of a story that's already been told. We will find out next Wednesday night that 2nd Chronicles covers 1st and 2nd Kings all over again. 1st Chronicles covers 2nd Samuel all over again. But although it covers a period of history previously given, it looks at it from a different perspective. And that's the whole reason for the book of 1 Chronicles. We already have this story of Saul and his death. We all already have the story of David. But Chronicles gives us a different view and a different picture of the same story than what we got in 2 Samuel. Notice that the histories given in the books of Samuel and Kings look at Israel's history from a human standpoint. All right? The histories given in the books of Samuel and Kings look at Israel's history from a human standpoint. The histories in Chronicles look at it from a divine, or if you want to put heavenly, if you like the H words there, look at it from a divine standpoint. We're going to look at several examples right here underlying this statement. But so far we already see this. Chronicles is looking at the same thing as 2 Samuel, but 2 Samuel was looking at it from a secular perspective, from a human perspective. But when we get over to Chronicles and the retelling of the story, we'll talk about when it's taking place. When we see it, it's looking more from a divine perspective. Things that are in 2 Samuel are not in 1 Chronicles. Things that are in 1 Chronicles were not in 2 Samuel. It's the same accounts, but different details given, and we'll see that right here. Notice, Samuel and Kings were written by prophets. All right, Samuel, 1 and 2 Samuel. 1 Samuel was written by Samuel. 2 Samuel, we know, was written by, we saw was written by Gad and Asher. Two of the other prophets. And then 1 and 2 Kings were written by those same two prophets. And throughout 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, it's all about prophets, 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 prophets. The earthly ministry of the prophet. But Chronicles was written by a priest. We'll get down to it in a minute. It's probably Ezra that has written the book of 2 Chronicles. And now the focus is on the priesthood. All right? Those first four books of the Kings, as they were called, 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, 1 Kings, 2 Kings, written by prophets, about prophets, Elijah, Elisha, Nathan the prophet, Gad the prophet, all of them, Abishai, or one of the other prophets, all those Abis get my get me confused. But all those prophets were written about. But in 1 Chronicles, we read about Nathan two times in it, two times the word prophet, but the emphasis is now on the priesthood. It's God looking from a spiritual perspective at the history of Israel. Notice we put here, Samuel emphasizes the throne, the palace, and the political history of Israel. When we're reading 1 and 2 Samuel, we're reading about the kingdom. We're reading about the reign of David, the reign of Solomon, all of Solomon's wealth and riches, how big and famous his kingdom was, how David came to the kingdom, how he ran from Saul for all those years. It's all earthly, so to speak. It's all political history. But Chronicles emphasizes the altar and the temple and the religious history of Israel. I didn't find any place to fit this in, but you remember the story in 2 Samuel chapter 6 of Samuel wanting to bring the ark from the land of the Philistines back into Israel, and they couldn't get it there. They only got it as far as the house of Obed-Edom because Uzziah reached out to steady the ark and he got killed and they all got discouraged and they left it there. Well, that one chapter is dedicated to the physical movement, the placement of that ark and what happened. But when we get to 1 Chronicles 13, 14, 15, 6, four chapters are dedicated to David moving that ark from Obed-Edom into Jerusalem. Because the emphasis in Chronicles is on the spiritual aspect. So more time is spent on that story and less time on some other stories. Like what? Well, 2 Samuel chapter 11. That chapter that I wish was not in the Bible. That chapter, every time I come to 2 Samuel 11, and in my Bible reading, as I read 10 pages in the Old Testament every day, 2 Samuel 11 is right where I stop one day and start the next day. So I finish chapter 10 one day and I know tomorrow I'm reading 2 Samuel chapter 11, and I don't want to read it. Because I don't want to read about David and Bathsheba. I don't want to read about David's sin. I don't want to read about his fall. I don't want to read about his plotting against Uriah the Hittite and trying to get him at the forefront of the battle and what he did. I don't like any of that stuff. Now, I read it because it's Bible and it's story. But you know what isn't in 1 Chronicles? Repeating the same period of time? You know what's not in 1 Chronicles? The story of David and Bathsheba. It's not there. Why? Because God's forgiven it. It's from a heavenly viewpoint. It's not from an earthly standpoint. It's from a heavenly viewpoint. And I think, I skipped a little bit because I get carried away. I get excited teaching this stuff because I'm just thrilled every time I study the Bible and see what's in it. So I missed one, the one with the blank. Samuel tells us, and it seems like an unusual word to fill in the blank, but Samuel tells us that Saul died. All right. The book of Samuel tells us in the last chapter of 2 Samuel, he's out fighting the Philistines and he gets killed. He gets an arrow inside of him and then he calls upon one of his servants, one of those men, an Amalekite, to come and slay him because his life is yet in him. We read about him dying. But Chronicles tells us why he died. 1 Chronicles chapter 10, verse number 13. So Saul died for his transgression which he committed against the Lord, even against the word of the Lord which he kept not, and also for asking counsel of one that had a familiar spirit to inquire of it, and inquired not of the Lord. Therefore he slew him and turned the kingdom into David the son of Jesse. God's perspective in 1 Chronicles, he's telling us why Saul died. And Saul died because of his transgression against the Lord. Alright, that's not told us in 1 and 2 Samuel. Now we're getting heaven's perspective. God is telling us why that happened. Our next line there tells us the same thing. In 2 Samuel, we read about David numbering the children of Israel, which was a sin. Now you say, well, preacher, wait a minute. You just told us that one sin that was in Samuel wasn't even mentioned. Well, this one is mentioned. It's repeated. It's talked about again. But this time we get the reason behind it, and it's a spiritual reason. You'll notice there it says in 1 Chronicles 21 and verse 1 that Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to number Israel. So Chronicles gives us some information we didn't have from back there. Why Saul died? What motivated David? What provoked him to write these things? So we're getting the spiritual perspective in Chronicles that we didn't get. It's like this. It's like 1 Samuel's like going into the classroom and opening the history book and finding out what happened. Chronicles is like reopening up God's book and finding out why it happened. All right. A lot of times we can study history. We know what happened, but a lot of times we don't know why it happened. People take guesses. But here we're getting the reasons why. That's what Chronicles is all about, to give the spiritual background to the secular information. Our next paragraph. The books of the Chronicles, and I'm talking about 1st and 2nd Chronicles together, are believed to have been written by Ezra. Right after 2nd Chronicles is the book of Ezra. And 1st and 2nd Chronicles lead us right into the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. Look, if you would, at the last verses of 2nd Chronicles. 2nd Chronicles chapter 36. And if you would, just kind of without taking the time to read through it, but look at 2nd Chronicles 36 and verse 22. Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia. Now turn the page, or look down the page if you would, to Ezra chapter 1 verse 1. Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia. If you take the time to notice that the last two verses in 2 Chronicles 36 verse 22 and verse 23 are word for word the first three verses of Ezra chapter 1. They're completely identical. They're exactly the same. When you read the book of Ezra, if you read Chronicles and then read Ezra, it's almost like you're reading the same person. You're reading the same author. Their wording and their style, their phraseology is going to be the same. So though we have no concrete evidence and don't really need any, we believe that the book is written by Ezra. We know it had to be written by a priest because in 1 Chronicles we read the depth of the information about the temple and the altar and the service of God. We believe that it's written, or history says that it's been written by Ezra. It was written to the Jews that were coming back from the 70-year exile in Babylon. You remember 2 Kings where it took us? It took us to the division of the kingdoms under Rehoboam and Jeroboam, and I know all that gets real confusing. But the northern kingdom split from the southern kingdoms, and the northern kingdoms ended up going into captivity, and then the southern kingdoms lasted longer before they went into Babylonian captivity. Then they were there for 70 years. Well, 1st and 2nd Chronicles were written after Israel came back into the land. They'd been in Babylon for 70 years. They had been scattered. Jerusalem had been destroyed. All the records of their history, all the accounts of their genealogy, were burned and destroyed when the temple and the city of Jerusalem were destroyed. All their historical records are now gone. And they're coming back from Babylon. And now Ezra the scribe, Ezra the priest, is writing, rewriting their history and giving a genealogy of their background. That's why the genealogy is there. It starts all the way back with Adam. In chapter 1, verse number 1. Now, if I were to tell you tonight, I want to just spend a few minutes and give you the history of the world, starting with Adam. You'd pack a lunch. You know you're going to be here for a while. You'd look for the popcorn machine. That's what Chronicles does. It starts us with Adam and brings us all the way to the present time at the end of the 70-year captivity from Babylon. And it re-gives them their history and their genealogy. You know, we covered this in Revelation. The 10 lost tribes, those 10 tribes that went into Babylonian captivity, and now where are they? And Jews don't know what their background is. They don't know where they came from. And the reason is because when they went into captivity, all the records were burned. You know, there's websites you can go to, or sites you can go to now that they can trace your DNA and genealogy and all that kind of stuff. Well, they didn't have the DNA stuff back then. And when Jerusalem got burned, all the Jewish records got burned. It was devastating to them. The temple was enough that Solomon had built it. It was destroyed and Jerusalem was destroyed. But all of their written history went up with it. And so in 1 Chronicles, Ezra is rewriting that history from a heavenly perspective to encourage the people as they're coming back. Let's build the temple. Let's build the walls. Let's get the Levites back in their place. And you'll find all of these teachings all the way through the book of 1 Chronicles. It was written after the return of the remnant from their 70-year exile in Babylon. The first 9 chapters, those are the ones that tackle us all the time, give a chronology of the line of descent from Adam to the present date of the writing. This was to remind Israel, whose genealogies have been lost during the exile, of their special relationship to the Lord. Chronicles takes us to the desire, the decree, and the determination of Judah to rebuild the temple and to restore the worship of the Lord. And those things will happen in the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. Chronicles is taking us on the spiritual trip to Ezra and Nehemiah and them coming back to Babylon after that 70 years in exile, the Jews coming back. They don't know what their lineage is. They don't know what tribe they're from. And now you get all those names in 1 Chronicles in the first 6 chapters especially, and then on through chapter 9. And there's something there that for a Jew would tweak their mind. Oh, I remember great-granddaddy talking about that person. And all of a sudden in that list of genealogies, they could say, well, that must be our tribe. That must be who we're from. You notice in First Chronicles, and we'll get to this when we get to our outline here in a few minutes. I mean, Adam, Seth, Enos, Canaan, Mahalalel, Jared, Enoch, Methuselah. Down in verse 5, the sons of Japheth. Down in verse 8, the sons of Ham. Down in verse number, where is he? The sons of Shem. 17. There he is, the sons of Shem. All right, there's the three lines that populated the whole earth after the flood of Noah's day. Japheth went to Europe. Ham went to Africa. Shem went to the Orient, to the Middle East. And we've got from them all the peoples that have populated the earth from that time, our very beginnings. They go back in Chronicles to the very beginning. Then they trace the Jews through Seth. Through Shem, and trace him down to David so that the people of Israel could grab onto something and say, that's our heritage. That's what we've got. They needed that after the 70 years of being corrupted in Babylon by the idolatry and the wickedness and the immorality of that place that they called home for 70 years. And as you know, and we'll get to the other books, when Cyrus made the decree that the Jews could go back to Jerusalem, many of them didn't want to. They wanted to stay in Babylon. They had now had children in Babylon and great-grandchildren in Babylon. They'd started businesses in Babylon and they made their roots in Babylon and built their homes. And they didn't want to go back to Jerusalem. So it was only a remnant that actually went back. Many of them stayed scattered throughout those lands. The key words in 1 Chronicles kind of help us to see again the purpose of the book. The name of David appears 180 times in the book of 1 Chronicles. He is really the theme of the book. The first 9 chapters give us the chronology. Chapter 10 is about Saul and his death, and then starting in chapter 11 all the way to chapter 29, it's David being talked about all over again. It's interesting to note, and I don't have this in our notes at all, but in the Hebrew Bible, in the canon of Scripture, 1st and 2nd Chronicles are the last books of the Old Testament. We have them in a different order in our English Bible than the Hebrew Bible does. And it goes straight from 1st and 2nd Chronicles to Matthew, giving that spiritual reminder that we came from Adam all the way down to David, and then now in Matthew chapter 1, from David to Christ. So the book of 1 Chronicles mentions David by name 180 times. The phrase, the sons of, or the son of, appears 440 times. That's why you get bored. Verse 5, the sons of. Verse 6, the sons of. Verse 7, the sons of. Verse 8, the sons of. Verse 9, the sons of. 440 times, either in the singular or the plural. The sons of is 240, and the son of is 200 times. Again, we're getting genealogy. We're getting the chronology of the children of Israel from Adam all the way down through Abraham, all the way down to David and David's descendants after him until the time of coming back from the captivity. The word begat, don't you just love that one? The word begat appears 85 times in the first 9 chapters. Can you imagine if they took all the sons of and the son of and the begats out? You could read the first 9 chapters in about 5 minutes. But that's what it's about. It's establishing the lineage, the line of David, and to coming to Christ. The word firstborn appears 22 times in the first 9 chapters, giving Abraham and his firstborn, Isaac and his firstborn, Israel or Jacob and his firstborn. Again, following that lineage all the way down. It's very important to the Jewish people. And they one of these days soon are going to be reinterested in that lineage. The word children appears 66 times in these 39 chapters. And their children. And their children. And their children. It's all about that lineage and that line. The word reckoned. And you know what reckoned means? It was reckoned to them. It was reckoned. They were reckoned. They were counted. They were numbered. The numbering of the people, the counting of them. We haven't seen that word really since the book of Numbers. The numbering of the people appears only 7 times, but that's 1/3 of the times it appears in the Bible. So it's pretty much a lot for one book of the Bible. All these things indicate, again, the purpose of the book. To give that lineage, those first 9 chapters, to give that ancestry from Adam down to these people that are coming back out of Babylon, confused about who they are, where they're from, what their family lines are. They don't know any of that stuff, to which a Jew is very important. That was very important. And now Ezra is writing all this stuff down so that when they come back, they have something to cling on to and a hope to go for as they build the temple in the book of Ezra and Nehemiah. An overview of 1 Chronicles. Number 1, the royal line of David. Chapters 1 to 9. The royal line of David. And again, that's the purpose of those genealogies. Sonia? Huh? I miss what?
You skipped the house of God.
The house of God. I skipped the house of God. I know why. Watch out for those 13s. The house of God appears 13 times. House of God, this isn't the first time it appears, and it will appear more in 2 Chronicles and Ezra than it does in 1 Chronicles. But this is the first time that phrase has been in the Bible since the book of Joshua. We've gone through Judges, 1st, 2nd Samuel, 1st and 2nd Kings. We've never read about the house of God, the house of God, the house of God. This is the first time that phrase has popped up since Joshua, and now it's going to become a predominant theme through the next few books as they rebuild the temple in Jerusalem and get back to the house of God. And as you're reading 1st Chronicles, I've underlined it every time it appears in my Bible with a blue or green marker, and it just comes up over and over again, the emphasis on the house of God. All right. Now the overview of 1 Chronicles. The royal line of David, chapters 1 to 9. This is the division of Chronicles. The first 9 chapters about one thing, and then 10 to 29 really is about David, starting with Saul, but it's about David's reign. Chapters 10 to 29 only cover 33 years of history, because we know David's reign in Hebron was only 33 years. Just like the Lord Jesus Christ's earthly life was 33 years. David was a picture of him. But the beginning starts with Adam and goes all the way to Saul. There's about 23,000 years of history right there. So in that sense, the book of Chronicles covers more time than any other book in the Bible. But the royal line of David is what's being explained in chapters 1 to 9. Letter A, and aren't you glad I didn't put blanks in so you didn't have to spell these words? The pre-exilic names. So what does that mean? Well, remember, when the kingdoms were divided, the northern kingdom went into exile. The southern kingdoms went into exile. And those southern kingdoms, when they went into exile, they were the tribe of Judah. They were the two tribes. The northern were 10. I think I get those backwards sometimes. But the two southern tribes, Judah and Benjamin, when they went into Babylonian captivity, before all those captivities began, the pre-exilic list of the names starts in chapter 1, verse 1, as we mentioned already. Verse 5, the sons of Japheth. Verse number 17, the sons of Shem. And I skipped one. Verse 8, the sons of Ham. That is, number 1, the primeval line. The primeval line. P-R-I-M-E-V-A-L. Not evil, E-V-I-L. The primeval line. Back before the flood. Back before, not before the flood, but back during that time. Back in the old days. All right. And it is kind of pre-flood as far as Japheth and Ham and Adam and Seth and Enos. Number 2, the patriarchal line. Beginning in verse number 24. Shem, Arphaxad, Shelah. The patriarchal line coming down to Abraham in verse number 28. Down from there. Number 3, the promised line. Verse 34 to verse 54. The promised line, that was the seed of the line of Isaac and his seed, that promised son. We get his genealogy in there. Number 4, the protected line in chapter 2. Those are the sons of Israel, the sons of Jacob, down through Joseph, down through Judah. Judah is the line of Christ. While Reuben defiled his line, and the other sons of Israel defiled their line, God kept Judah pure. He was the protected line. And then number 5, the princely line, chapters 3 to chapter 8. And that is the line of David, the princely line. So in all of these names, we've got it broken down into categories. We see why there's a pattern to it. It's not haphazard. It's not a bunch of names thrown together as you read down through it. It's in an orderly system. Started at the beginning, looking at the primeval, patriarchal, promised, protected, and princely lines. Then in chapter 9, we have the post-exilic notes. In other words, now we're back from Babylon. That was the genealogy before Babylon. Now we're back. And in chapter 9 and verse 1 it says, so all Israel was reckoned by genealogies. And behold, they were written in the book of the kings of Israel and of Judah, and were carried away to Babylon for their transgression. Now the first inhabitants that dwelt in their possessions and in their cities were the Israelites, the priests, the Levites, and the Nethinims. As they came back from Babylon, they came back looking for their lineage and their cities and their homeland and their family lots and property. And they had to find them by getting their genealogies back together. So Ezra put all that back together here in the book of 1 Chronicles. The royal line of David in the first 9 chapters. Then number 2, the reign of David, chapters 10 to 29. The reign of David. David dies at the end of this book. Solomon will pick up in 2 Chronicles. And again, that 2 Chronicles will mirror 1 and 2 Kings about the reign of Solomon and the divisions of the kingdoms. The reign of David, in chapter 10, letter A, it's Saul's conclusion. Saul's conclusion. We read that already in verse number 13. Why the Lord killed him? For his transgression against the Lord. There's always a why to everything that happens. But we don't always know the spiritual reason for it. Saul's conclusion, letter B, David's coronation. Chapters 11 and 12, David's coronation. He is now made king in the place of Saul. What a great coronation it is. It takes place in chapters 11 and chapters 12. To go from the reign of Saul to the reign of David was a glorious thing for the nation of Israel. It's pictured, or it is a picture, of the reign of the Antichrist to the reign of Jesus Christ in the millennium. Saul is that picture of one that starts out good. You read in 1 Samuel chapter 2, 3, and 4. He's a goodly young man, head and shoulders taller than everybody else. Everything about him is good. Good heritage, all that. But he goes bad. He turns wicked. He goes to the witch at Endor to get information and stuff. And he goes, and then he starts pursuing David through the wilderness, trying to kill him. A type of the Antichrist. And then he is replaced by David, a type of Jesus Christ in the millennial reign. So all those things in the Bible have pictures to them. So the coronation, letter C, David's consecration. Verse 13 to 17, or chapters 13 to 17. David's consecration. Again, that's the story of David bringing the ark from the house of Obed-Edom back into Jerusalem. Four chapters are dedicated to that spiritual victory of David bringing it back in. Letter D, David's conquests, chapters 18 to 20. As he defeats his enemies round about him and unites the kingdom and leads it to its glorious period in history. Then letter E, David's conceit. David's conceit, that's when he gets proud and the devil provokes him to number the children of Israel. God had told kings never to number the people because he didn't want them to trust in their numbers. He didn't want them to trust in their strength. And David, when he became king and kind of got lackadaisical and proud of all he had accomplished as he conquered his enemies, the devil provoked him. You know, pride is a great tool of the devil to use in someone's life. And even David himself had just enough pride in him that the devil was able to come in and provoke him and use that to his own destruction. And the judgment of God had to come upon the nation of Israel because of David's conceit as their king. Then letter F, David's concerns, chapter 22 to chapter 29. David's concerns. Who's going to succeed me on the throne? What's going to happen to the people of Israel? David before 2 Samuel 11 is a different king than the David after 2 Samuel 11. Again, I told you, that's why I don't like reading that chapter. I wish it wasn't there. I wish the story wasn't there. An overview of Chronicles, the royal line of David and the reign of David. The book of 1 Chronicles gives us that spiritual perspective and takes us from the history of the Samuel and the kings and prepares us for Ezra and Nehemiah as the Jewish people are coming in. And they need to know, do I go to the east, the north, the south, the west? Remember back in Numbers, all the 12 tribes and where they were placed around the tabernacle? Well, now they're coming back and everybody's in chaos. What are we all going to do? Move into the center of the city? So they're trying to find their genealogies. So when they come back, they work on the east gate, the west gate, my favorite, the dung gate. Not really my favorite, but they work on the dung. Got to get that stuff out of there somehow. The water gate. That wasn't the 1970s, but they got their 60s. But the water gate, they build all those things because they needed to know their genealogies. They needed to know their place. So the book of 1 Chronicles gives us all that information. Did you ever comprehend that all those begats and sons of and children were necessary? There was a purpose for them, because without that, the children of Israel would have never rebuilt their temple, never rebuilt the city of Jerusalem. They had to know their genealogies, and it's all given to them in 1 Chronicles, we think, by the scribe or the priest, Ezra. Let's stand together tonight with our heads bowed and our eyes closed.